Cool. Well, so Marx isn't usually thought of as like an activist. If you ever like, like study him in a class at uni or whatever, he's taught as like a theorist, philosopher, writer of, long books. And he did do that. But for 8 years studying in 1864, Marx was intensely involved in the practical organization of the European workers' movement. And throughout his life, he maintained that socialist politics wasn't really worth much if it couldn't be a guide to action. He famously declared that philosophers have only interpreted the world; the point is to change it. And he took throughout his life, he took any chance he had to any chance he had to seriously intervene in working class struggles. Marx took that chance. So before the First International, Marx was also active in the 1848 revolutions, where he established a revolutionary newspaper in Cologne, and allegedly used a third of his inheritance to buy guns for Belgian workers to defend themselves against the counter-revolution. Pretty cool. But it was his leading role and leadership in the International Working Men's Association that really established Marx as a serious political leader, and yeah, massively increased his political profile. Marx didn't found the International, but he quickly became its most prominent figure and became the kind of main political leader of the organization, which at its height, the International is estimated to have had around 150,000 members in the various countries throughout Europe, it through like affiliate groups and trade unions and branches across the continent. I think learning about some of this history is useful to give us a bit of a one to help us understand, how some of Marx's ideas developed, how they developed, often in very close relationship with workers' struggles and rebellions. Also, I think it's useful in terms of useful history in terms of understanding how a lot of the key political principles of the socialist movement were really established by Marx through rigorous and often heated debate with non-revolutionary sections of the workers' movement. It's also, I think, important in understanding the growth of socialist organizations, because the First International, it only lasted for about 8 years, but it left a huge legacy and really laid the basis for socialist politics and Marxism to take hold in future organizations by the late 19th century. So the First International, it was founded in 1864 at a mass meeting of workers in St. Martin's Hall in London. And so that's a nice picture of the initial invitation, the poster that invited workers to participate in the founding of the First International. It was set up by English trade unionists and French worker activists, mostly, who would set up the International to try to coordinate working class solidarity and collective action across the two countries. But it wasn't just English and French workers that attended. There were thousands. The meeting hall was packed to the rafters and attracted thousands of workers, both English, French, a bunch of German emigre worker activists, as well as like a bunch of like Italian Republican activists and Irish and Polish revolutionaries and activists. The thousands of attendees listened to a bunch of speakers from different leading activists from around Europe and voted unanimously to create what was the first ever real international working class organization, which they called the International Working Men's Association. First International is also what it's called. So Marx was invited to participate and be a part of the central leadership of the International. And it marked a return to direct political organizing for Marx, because after the defeat of the 1848 revolutions, there was a downturn in class struggle and few opportunities for Marx and Engels to, really get, into the nitty-gritty of working class organization. So that downturn lasted for about 10 years. But then by the early 1960s, things had started to move again. English unionists held mass rallies and meetings against slavery in the United States and in support of anti-colonial rebellions in Poland. And I think that was the first actually united meeting of French and English workers, was to support an uprising of Polish people against colonial occupation. That was in 1863. There was also, you know, a revival of interest in working class organization and trade unions. And that kind of led a lot of worker activists to the conclusion that they needed to organize across countries, basically, to strengthen their organization. Because previous strikes in the late 1850s had been broken by bosses moving production overseas, or by getting migrant labor to replace the English or French workers that were on strike. So they wanted to coordinate actions to prevent that from happening, basically. So this is like a meeting of real class forces, basically. Before the First International, there were other political kind of things going on in London, but a lot of it was more confined to like small circles of emigres and intellectuals. And so when, you know, real working class forces met to decide to found the International, Marx was very enthusiastic about it. Enthusiastically accepted the invitation to participate. Because it represented a real step forward for the workers' movement, real class forces trying to coordinate actions beyond just their individual countries and build a stronger, more combative workers' movement against the capitalists across Europe. But there were a bunch of things about the International that are pretty different from a lot of the International was very different from like the second and the third International that followed. It was a really diverse coalition. The different organizations that made it up had really different political perspectives and outlooks. So there were, really some of the core members of the International were English trade unionists. And they were, you know, for strikes and workers or worker organization, but they weren't particularly radical and they certainly weren't revolutionary. But there were also big groups in the International who opposed strikes and trade unions. So the main group of this is the supporters of the anarchist Proudhon in France. They're opposed to trade unions. I'll talk about that a little bit in a little bit. But there were also some utopian socialists, supporters of Robert Owen, that also were, you know, critical of unions and strikes. As well as those groups, there were, Italian Republicans who didn't really have any connection to the workers' movement for the most part. There were Irish and Polish nationalists and some supporters of the insurrectionist Auguste Blanqui in France. So really diverse politics all over the place, really. And at the time, Marx was kind of, in comparison to those groups, relatively obscure in the workers' movement and in the left. He had a handful of supporters in the emigre activist community in London and a small number of supporters in Germany, most notably Wilhelm Liebknecht. So initially, Marx was like a minority and his ideas didn't really represent a big block of the International. But by intervening, Marx wanted to, on the one hand, argue for class struggle and try to facilitate real class struggles across Europe. But he also wanted to try to establish key principles for the workers' movement. And in order to do that, he had to participate in rigorous and serious debates. And he also wanted to try to popularize specifically revolutionary socialist politics in the International and find, you know, supporters and allies to try to establish in the future more explicitly socialist and revolutionary groups. So in order to do this, Marx basically spent the next 7 years of his life almost exclusively focused on the International. As well as like writing, he was elected and given the task of writing the rules of the international and the principles, as well as founding an inaugural address to the international. But he also spent a lot of time doing the kind of nitty gritty work of the international, trying to sign up new affiliates, or coordinate strike support campaigns, and sign up new branches of the international. He spent a lot of time like raising funds and that kind of thing as well. So he took a close interest in the practical day-to-day activity of the international while also participating in the bigger political debates. And I want to talk, so I want to go through what some of the key arguments Marx made in the international, because I think they're, pretty crucial, arguments for class struggle in general. Became extremely influential and important arguments, the workers' movement. So the rules of the international that he wrote begin with the absolute classic, socialist principle that the emancipation of the working class must be conquered by the working classes themselves. The workers were not going to be saved by bourgeois liberals or by a benevolent capitalist government. They needed to organize in their own right to fight for their own interests. And in his founding address for the international, Marx makes a few arguments. He argues that, first he starts out by pointing out the inhumanity of the capitalist system, which in the previous 10 years had massively increased the wealth of a minority while workers got poorer and poverty increased. Used that to kind of argue that workers had nothing to gain from the profitability of the capitalist system. That the system was fundamentally based on the exploitation of workers. And he also talked about some of the successful campaigns that workers had some of the kind of victories, partial victories that workers had achieved. So he talked about the restriction of the working day in Britain to 10 hours. And he championed this as the first time in broad daylight that the political economy of the middle class succumbed to the political economy of the working class. So first time that a political reform was won to restrict the ability of bosses to exploit workers. And that showed that, it was possible for workers to continue to fight for more. He also talked about workers' cooperatives movements that had developed in England and in France. But he made the point to say that on the one hand, workers' cooperatives could demonstrate that capitalists weren't needed to run production. But on the other hand, that if they were just limited to their own workplaces and they didn't actually challenge the entirety of the capitalist market, and if they didn't challenge, they didn't build a movement that could challenge for political power, then they would be inherently limited because they couldn't overcome the horrors of the market and the capitalists, political institutions of the state. They had to overthrow those things if workers were actually going to emancipate themselves. I think even right from the start, Marx used the address to point to achievements of the workers' movement, but make arguments that workers had to go beyond the current political, current level of organization and struggle. And at one point he says that a key task of the workers' movement is to begin to challenge for political power. So that's an early argument that he makes, is that the economic and political questions that face the workers' movement are not separate, and workers had to fight on both fronts. I want to talk a little bit about like the debates around strikes and unions, because it might seem obvious today that socialists support strikes and unions, but it wasn't in the 1860s. There were some utopian socialists grouped around Robert Owen that argued that wage increases were harmful to workers in the international. Marx has a debate against that. But the biggest anti-union kind of bloc in the international at the start was the Proudhonists, the supporters of Pierre Proudhon, a French anarchist. Proudhon, he died before the start of the international, but he was probably the more popular figure in France in kind of left-wing and worker circles. Proudhon had argued that workers and cooperatives and collective credit societies could build an alternative to capitalism from within the system effectively. And that strikes and class conflict were actually harmful to the workers' movement because they were a barrier to building these, you know, cooperatives and credit societies. So he was, yeah, hostile to trade unions and explicitly opposed to revolution. He basically advocated for a gradualist strategy in which workers kind of carve out a spot for themselves in the market and, you know, hopefully take it over, like over time. So it's a gradualist, kind of approach to like workers' rights and the workers' movement, that, yeah, opposed class conflict and struggle. And this, so the debates around, you know, the supporters of Proudhon moved motions in the meetings of the International to, you know, oppose, strikes and trade unions and that kind of thing. And this became a big debate in the, Geneva Congress in 1866. Maybe it's, well, I think it's worth saying that this sort of strategy of like, utopian cooperative societies, taking over the system, is, totally, it's a huge barrier actually to the workers' movement, developing. And the, yeah, if the worker activists in France opposed strikes and trade unions, that would hold back the, workers' movement and the First International from taking even the most basic steps, towards establishing a serious, like, socialist and radical, working class organization. So the argument around this was very important. And Marx, you know, there are a whole bunch of kind of, arguments that he made around this. First, to point out that actually strikes had, you know, several times improved the conditions of workers. But not only that, that strikes and what he called the, guerrilla struggles of the working class, and the, its organizations of the trade unions were also crucial to developing, a sense of class identity and consciousness, basically. So workers, by collectively organizing, they can discover that they have, a degree of power against capitalists that can raise all sorts of other political demands, and it can draw workers into radical political movements in a way that just being a part of a credit society doesn't really teach you anything about society, and how to fight for your rights. So Marx on the one hand made the political arguments, but also committed the organization, the International organizationally to strike support, campaigns of the International where, you know, on the one hand, the different branches of the International began to raise funds for workers on strike. So British workers would, you know, raise money for striking workers in Geneva or wherever really. And a lot of the time these sort of strike solidarity campaigns were pretty important for the strikes actually winning. And there were a series of strikes throughout Europe in different countries that achieved real victories on the basis of the coordination that was provided by the International. But then as well as the kind of basic support and kind of some coordination to stop strike breaking and stuff. The other cool thing that Marx and his supporters did was to write pamphlets about those strikes to try to document what the lessons of the strikes were and argue that, you know, this sort of organization needs to be, you know, replicated in other places, and publicizing the role of the International in helping to organize strikes. So I think this mix of political arguments against the Proudhonists, as well as the practical demonstration of the fact that strikes, were a much, you know, more important way forward was, important for actually, weakening the influence of Proudhon's ideas. And basically by like 1867, 1868, Proudhon's proper ideas were pretty irrelevant, really. And the kind of mutualist strategy, what it was called, totally became marginal in the International through those debates. And yeah, I just say that I think that's really good because, yeah, the strikes that were successful, they drew workers into radical political organizations. Whereas, yeah, the credit societies that the Proudhonists made, they could sometimes be popular, but they didn't draw workers into political activity anywhere near the way that strikes did. And the strike support of the International won the International heaps more affiliate organizations and members around the continent. Demonstrating that class struggle is the way forward for socialist organizing and anti-capitalists, The ideas of Proudhon became more marginal. Sections of the French, international branches that were previously inspired by Proudhon kind of shifted to the left and started supporting strikes. One prominent guy, Paul Lafargue, became a well-known supporter of Marx and later Marx's son-in-law. But a lot of the others kind of became more syndicalist, types. So not necessarily Marxists, but a step forward nonetheless, that they actually, gave a shit about strikes and kind of rejected the crap anarchist politics of Proudhon. Another key, project of the International was to organize support for movements of national self-determination, and rebellions against, colonial occupation. Don't have that much, speaking for longer than I thought. So I won't talk that much about that. But again, that was a point of debate between the anarchists and the Marxists. The anarchists said raising political demands are like the withdrawal of the English state from Ireland, or the end of the partition of Poland. Raising those sorts of political demands were a distraction from the, you know, economic progress of the credit societies, and that they kind of sowed illusions in the political state that existed in capitalism. Again, it would have been terrible if those politics had won out in the International, because it would have cut off the workers' movement from some of the most dynamic struggles, basically, the struggles against colonial oppression and rebellions against colonial rule. Marx made arguments on the one hand, point out that these rebellions could weaken the powerful capitalist states, but that also supporting these national movements was crucial in developing a class consciousness that allowed workers to break from their own ruling classes. So workers couldn't become fully conscious of their needs to overthrow the entire capitalist system if they supported their own ruling classes in oppressing the Irish or the Polish. The International ran and organized serious, campaigns of support for Fenian, rebels in Ireland to free prisoners, that were locked up for fighting for, freedom for Irish. Demanded their release and that kind of thing. Okay. Well, I think one of the other things that I think is a really, important positive achievement of the First International was how it responded to, Proudhon, and Marx. The other thing I wanted to talk about in terms of the positive achievement of the International, was, the way it popularized and championed the struggles of Parisian workers, who in 1871, organized a revolutionary government called the Paris Commune. In 1871, at the end of a war with Prussia, workers of Paris rose up against their own government and established a revolutionary government called the Paris Commune. Workers' associations basically took over the operations of Paris. Many bosses fled, and workers began to restart production under their own collective control. This rebellion and working class revolutionary movement was the first real example of the working class's ability to administrate and run all sections of society. The commune lasted 72 days before it was violently crushed by the French state, upon which the new bourgeois republic was founded. In response to the Paris Commune, Marx wrote what became one of the most famous and important publications of the International. We've got some copies in our bookshop. The Civil War in France. There's only two copies, so if you want one, get in quick. In the Civil War in France, Marx stridently defended the revolutionary workers and championed the commune as an example of working class power. And the pamphlet basically became quite quickly a bestseller. And someone was telling me yesterday that apparently there was a period where the Civil War in France was the most widely read book in Australia, which is cool. It had a pretty enormous influence. And Marx's authoring of the Paris Commune, massively increased his profile and knowledge of his revolutionary politics. Marx made two arguments about the Commune, two main ones that I want to talk about. And he argued these things to the international workers' movement. One, that only the working class revolution could create a truly liberated society. So he said, he called the commune the first revolution in which the working class was openly acknowledged as the only class capable of social initiative. Only workers had the, had the ability to restart production in this kind of democratic and collective way. And to organize in a kind of, in a way that could actually, not only run the economy, but take up political questions as well. Actually liberate all of society too. So Marx championed this and said that this is an example of the way forward for society. They've shined a light on a new way, a new kind of social organizing. He also argued that the commune proved that in order for workers to take power, they couldn't just do it through cannot simply lay hold of the ready-made state machinery and wield it for its own purposes. So when the workers of Paris rose up to try to take control of society, they didn't try to do it through, pre-existing parliamentary state institutions. They created their own organizations that were radically more democratic than anything that had existed previously before, basically, and wouldn't get trumped until the Russian Revolution of 1917, basically. They, abolished the police, set up new structures that were elected by workers and recallable at short notice. And so they could be held accountable to the workers' movement and the interests of the working class. One other cool thing I read about that they did was they basically forced all the pawn shops in Paris to give back workers their goods that they'd sold in the depths of an economic crisis. So, really championing downtrodden and the oppressed and, actually making practical decisions to improve their lives. Like, imagine if we fucking did that today, like got rid of all the debt that people are forced into in capitalism. What a liberating achievement that would be, I guess. And this is in, 1871. Led by, workers and the urban poor. The commune and Marx's pamphlet championing it sent shockwaves through Europe. It inspired scores of radical workers and attracted the intense hatred of the mainstream press and the bourgeoisie across Europe. For Marx's defense of the commune, he was called the Red Terror Doctor of Europe. pretty cool. Many capitalist politicians basically attributed the uprising to the International and to Marx, which is a bit of an exaggeration, but nonetheless, it was good that it was kind of a useful thing because it extended the prestige of the International in the eyes of workers who were keen to rebel against capitalism. But the defense of the commune also opened up new divisions in the International, and political differences came to the fore once again. The English trade unionists, more and more were becoming a part, like the leaders at least, more and more becoming a part of respectable society in Britain. And they increasingly distanced themselves from the International. A lot of them had parliamentary ambitions, wanted to, basically become a respected part of civil society. And defending a radical working class revolutionary upsurge was a bridge, a step too far for them. They could support arguments in favor of strikes and union organizing, supported the national rebellions in Ireland and Poland, but the radicalism of the commune, was just a step too far. The other sense in which it changed the nature of the International was that after the commune was crushed, there's an initial wave of radicalism of people inspired by the commune, but that wasn't to last. Began to be a downturn in struggle, and that restricted the scope for the International to continue growing. But it also meant that the forces of the International that weren't revolutionary socialists and stuff became more and more concerned with infighting. So I want to talk about the final kind of fight that Marx had to have in the International just briefly. What time is it? Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, all right. Final fight is between Marx and the Russian anarchists Mikhail Bakunin. And I think it's worth mentioning briefly because Bakunin is still today you have to say, probably one of the most influential anarchist theorists. A lot of people still refer to him, and, you know, champion him as a supposed anti-authoritarian, revolutionary, figure of, anarchism. But his record in the international is appalling. Bakunin, rather than wanting to open, organize and publish, like organize and spread his ideas openly, Bakunin was obsessed with forming secret societies. He set up dozens of these things, in the international. And he very explicitly in letters to, his supporters and his co-conspirators, talked about how these secret societies would, you know, lead a revolution from behind the scenes. People wouldn't know about the existence of any of these societies, but they'd be calling the shots. And that's the only way you could get anarchism, according to Bakunin. This method of organizing is anathema to the workers' movement. Workers and socialists have to proclaim their ideas publicly and try to win people to revolutionary socialist ideas on the basis of open argument and debate rather than secret organizing and yeah, conspiracies, basically. Bakunin also basically like tried to wreck the international, argue that the central leadership should be deprived of any ability to like kind of argue things or con- you know, say anything. Like this is the central leadership is elected by all the different members groups of the international, but Bakunin said it was an authoritarian you know, blight on the workers, on the international, and should be basically deprived of any power over like autonomous local sections. This meant that it was basically impossible to work. It would be basically impossible to seriously work out political differences in the workers' movement and figure out what strategy is actually successful. It would have just been a disaster, for Bakunin's, strategy to be implemented. And actually one example of this is that after the first international kind of, ends, Bakunin tries to set up, his own, you know, anarchist international, but it goes basically nowhere because it can't really, guide a proper struggle. It being so diffuse and autonomous, I think. Yeah, as well as that, Bakunin also had a range of political disagreements with Marx. So he argued that, you know, Marx exaggerated the revolutionary role of industrial workers. Bakunin instead actually argued that industrial workers were more likely to be just bought off and incorporated into the system. He said that, at some points that said that they were polluted by bourgeois society. Then instead, he argued that the only real revolutionary agent were people who existed on the fringes of capitalism. So like peasants, the unemployed and petty criminals. And one of his closest associates was a thuggish, like murderous, like criminal, this guy Nechayev. I'm not going to talk about him though. He was expelled from the international for good reason. And then as well as that, the Bakuninists were hostile to taking up political demands in the same way that the Proudhon people were. So I think the fact that the international was kind of more and more just paralyzed by these debates, and the fact that also the English trade unionists you know, dissociated themselves from it, basically made the international a pretty impossible project by 1872, and it effectively collapsed like around that time. Yeah, some of the things that happened, Bakunin and his secret societies got expelled, and Marx and Engels, realizing that the whole thing was collapsing, voted to move the headquarters of the international to New York, where it wouldn't just be wrecked by, all these, like, competing, like, non-revolutionary currents and stuff. So to finish up, I just want to say a bit about, like, the legacy of the international and Marx's role in it. The First International never itself led a successful socialist revolution, but it had a huge legacy in establishing key socialist principles in the workers' movement, around Europe and around the world. So, you know, it established that strikes and working class struggle, organized independently of the bosses, was a crucial, you know, guerrilla fight, in the war against capitalism. And something that, socialists had to orient to, you know, really seriously, not work with liberal governments or not just establish, like our own kind of utopian communes within the system. It also established that workers have to support the struggles of all of the oppressed. So, you know, support the rebellious nationalities. At various points, the international, through Marx's argument, you know, championed the rights of women workers and, tried to actively organize women workers in struggle. But yeah, and also it established through Marx's argument around the Paris Commune, at least among a section of workers, the workers couldn't just take over the ready-made state institutions and instead had to smash them in a revolution where they took political power. But just as importantly, the International also laid the basis for future socialist organizations. So at the end of the International, the other kind of key argument that Marx's makes is that workers need to set up political parties in every single country. The International itself didn't really do that. But the arguments that Marx made for it became influential in future generations of socialist organizing. So the allies that Marx found around like Europe through his leading role in the International were pretty crucial in setting up mass working class radical political organizations by the late 19th century. These organizations were set up on a more clear political basis, which Marx and Engels had recognized was necessary for the next stage of the workers' movement. You know, having an organization that included all of these diverse groupings could facilitate struggles in the here and now, but it was always going to be a temporary phenomenon because the union leaders were never going to support revolution, and the anarchists were always going to kind of wreck things at a certain point. The hostility to like to political demands and secret organizing just was kind of a wrecking maneuver basically. I think the kind of establishment of the International and Marx's leadership of it left a really big legacy in terms of future generations of socialist organizing. That, you know, more explicitly socialist, more explicitly radical and revolutionary. And, it was pretty crucial for making Marxism and socialism kind of like the main political tendency in the workers' movement, by the end of the 19th century in a whole bunch of countries. And I think the kind of lessons about the need for political clarity around these ideas are evident a few years after the, First International, when supporters of Marx set up a new party in Germany. And Marx and Engels argue for it to not make any concessions to bourgeois liberal ideas and to, take up an explicitly revolutionary, radical political program. And that kind of, those sorts of arguments had a really deep and very important political legacy. I think in some ways the International is a pretty kind of unique kind of formation. There aren't that many times when all these different diverse kind of groups can come together, I guess. And today it would be very hard to see trade union leaders in pretty much any country in the world wanting to form a like an alliance with radical in this same sort of way. So I think learning about the International isn't to necessarily say that we can replicate any kind of that form of organization. And Marx, I mean, he didn't actually establish the International himself, but it was something that existed around him that he intervened into to try to win more people to proper radical socialist politics. So I think, participating in those sorts of broader things and campaign groups can be useful, but only if you go in with a sense of trying to fight for the right politics, the politics that can actually lead workers to victory in struggle. And I think that is an enduring legacy of the First International, that even the most basic principles of socialist politics in the workers' movement, they're not obvious. And we face some similar kinds of questions often in politics and radical left organizing today. It's pretty common for people who are on the left to propose making communes or whatever that don't challenge the system overall and don't really show a way forward for building a radical revolutionary organizations. As well as that, I think, there are a bunch of organizations, anarchist or otherwise, that organize in secret ways that are, wrecking and crap for the left. And so I think, learning from these debates about why that is wrong and why proper revolutionary socialist politics is the right way forward for a workers' movement is important lessons for us, I think. But I think in some ways, the key lesson really is the one that Marx and Engels are arguing at the end, which is that socialists, need to build political organizations based on clear, assessment of the problems of capitalism and how workers can struggle, how workers can struggle to overthrow the entire capitalist system. I think that's a really important legacy of the International and one that we can, still hold on to today.
Yeah.